This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Thursday, December 15th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, experts warn that more than 200,000 Colorado children could lose health insurance when officials declare an end to the COVID public health emergency. This time on the Cannabis Report, we take a look at where Colorado stands on various marijuana issues now, 10 years after adult recreational use became legal in the state. Then, Radio Nibbles host John Lindorf will be back with the latest on local food news. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour, then it's a public affair. Today's guest host, CU student journalist Henry Larson, will share audio from a recent panel discussion at CU Boulder about the women's uprising in Iran. At 9:30, Shauna Sprouls will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead this morning, but first a look at the headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
The Department of the Interior announced Wednesday that it will allocate $228 million towards a program that will help states fight and recover from wildfires. United States Deputy Secretary of the Interior Tommy Boudreau made an appearance at the Rocky Mountain Arsenal National Wildlife Refuge Wednesday, alongside Governor Jared Polis, announcing that Colorado will receive $7 million of those federal dollars. With the one-year anniversary of the Marshall Fire approaching, Boudreau said they chose Colorado for the announcement as the December 30th firestorm underscores the ever-present danger of wildfire in a hotter and drier West and the impacts from climate change. The announced funding comes from the 2021 Federal Infrastructure Bill, which allowed the Interior Department to spend $1.5 billion on wildfire mitigation over the next 5 years. According to the Department of Interior, pay increases for firefighters, fuel management, and scientific research on fire management in the face of climate change are among the department's priorities for the infrastructure bill allotment. Two survivors from the Colorado Springs Club Q mass shooting, along with the Club Q's co-owner, testified Wednesday during a congressional hearing by the House Committee on Oversight and Reform, which covered the rise of anti-LGBTQ violence, rhetoric, and extremism within the country. The survivors described the terror they and others experienced the night of the shooting, while also pleading with lawmakers to change how they talk about their community. Michael Anderson, a Club Q bartender, scolded lawmakers who say the LGBTQ community grooms and abuses children. Anderson also urged lawmakers to ban assault weapons. Matthew Haynes, co-owner of Club Q, read hate messages during his testimony that are among the hundreds he says he has received since the shooting. The committee's chairperson, Representative Carolyn Maloney from New York, said the hearing was meant to show that violence against LGBTQ people does not happen in a vacuum. Maloney also opened the hearing with a summary of Republican legislative efforts that she says villainizes LGBTQ people. Colorado School of Mines has installed enough student-designed solar panels to help power its campus. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
Colorado School of Mines, located in Golden, has installed nearly $5 million of solar panels on buildings and parking lots around the campus to produce at least 1.5 megawatts of the 8 peak megawatts needed to run the engineering school's daily life. A large portion of the solar panel plan was designed by School of Mines students as part of their senior capstone projects that includes past years. Lauren Poole, School of Mines Sustainability Director, points out that you still must use mining in order to produce renewable energy products, and that mining needs to be responsible mining. Lithium and cobalt for EV batteries, refining silicone for solar panels, petroleum products for plastics, and other parts for wind energy. Conscientious mining is what the School of Mines has been aiming for nearly 150 years. School of Mines partners with the nearby National Renewable Energy Laboratory to offer graduate degrees in advanced energy systems. Between students, faculty, and the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, this makes the city of Golden a hotbed of solar experts to consult and design on any given project. For KGNU, I'm Steve Miller.
The Regional Transportation District says it will permanently end running the C and F light rail lines starting January 8th as part of a system optimization plan approved by its board last summer. RTD suspended operations for the two light rail lines in 2020 at the start of the pandemic and has not resumed them since. The C line route went from Union Station to Littleton, while the F line went from central downtown to Lone Tree. RTD consolidated the two lines with other routes in the Southwest and Southeast rail corridors, making some riders transfer to the E&D line south of downtown. The agency said it will consider running limited service along the former routes during special events. As part of the January service changes, RTD will also expand weekday service hours and reroute some regional and FlexRide bus routes. Attorneys for Delvin Gadsden, a 29-year-old unhoused Black veteran in Colorado Springs, are calling for a criminal investigation into the use of force by three Colorado Springs police officers. The body camera footage released Tuesday shows a Colorado Springs police officer pulling over Gadsden for no license plates on October 9th and then calling for backup when running the identification of Gadsden and his passenger. As Gadsden pulled himself back into the car after being told by the officers he would be detained, the officers then charged at him and punched him repeatedly as they pulled him out of the vehicle. Prior to removing Gadsden from the car, officers noted a knife on the center console. According to his attorneys, Gadsden suffered injuries to his eye, a ruptured eardrum, and PTSD. The Colorado Springs Police Department says an administrative review found the officers' actions to be within policy, and an internal investigation remains open. There has been another death in the Colorado Springs El Paso County Jail this week. This was the 11th death since 2020 and the 9th death at the jail this year. According to the Colorado Springs Indy, 24-year-old Savannah Popel was found unresponsive in her jail cell on December 11th. She had been booked into jail days earlier for a number of nonviolent crimes, including speeding, shoplifting, less than $300, and a possession of a controlled substance. School board members for the Boulder Valley School District approved an intergovernmental agreement on Tuesday that outlines the creation of a new modular home factory at the district's education center located at 6500 Arapahoe Road. As part of the construction details of the modular factory, BVSD officials are also seeking to have the district's 48-acre education center property be annexed into Boulder. Boulder City Council will discuss the intergovernmental agreement as well as the proposed annexation during tonight's meeting. During a November City Council meeting, council members voted to continue the public hearing on the annexation in order for staff to evaluate suggested changes after several residents complained about potential noise levels, increased traffic, and impacts to the Sobrero Marsh open space. For today's weather, the National Weather Service says it will be partly sunny with highs in the low 30s. Fort Collins will have breezy winds with gusts as high as 33 miles per hour. Winds will be a little calmer for Boulder and Denver, reaching as high as 16 miles per hour. Tonight, skies will be partly cloudy with lows around 12 degrees. The current temperature in Boulder is 22 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Children's uninsured rates are down in Colorado, according to a new Georgetown University Center for Children and Families report. But experts warn that when the Colorado public health emergency is declared over, more than 200,000 Colorado children could lose health insurance. Eric Galatis has more.
Colorado saw the number of children without health insurance drop significantly between 2019 and 2021, according to a new report from Georgetown University. This reverses a trend from the previous 2 years. But Aaron Miller with the Colorado Children's Campaign points to state data showing that more than 200,000 children are at risk of losing coverage when the COVID public health emergency expires. She says families losing coverage could face major financial risks, including medical debt and bankruptcy.
Folks are worried that they're not going to be able to afford their their kids' glasses if they don't have Medicaid or CHIP coverage, or they're worried about going to the pharmacy one day to refill their kids' asthma medication and finding out they don't have insurance anymore.
Loss of coverage is largely due to the return of administrative burdens that were lifted at the onset of the pandemic. As soon as next April, families eligible for insurance through the Children's Health Insurance Plan or CHIP and Medicaid will no longer keep their coverage. They will have to go through a complicated and lengthy application process. The Georgetown report warns that nationally, 6.7 million children could lose coverage when the pandemic is declared over. Report lead author Joan Alker with Georgetown's Center for Children and Families says 3 out of every 4 children who may lose insurance through Medicaid will still be eligible for coverage.
Sometimes children lose coverage in normal times at Medicaid renewal just because the letter gets lost in the mail. Families with limited English proficiency may have more trouble getting through the renewal process successfully.
When families have insurance, Miller says maternal and child mortality rates go down and kids are more likely to graduate from high school and college and have higher income as adults. She says the continuous coverage protections established during the pandemic, which kept families enrolled without all the red tape, shows it's possible to ensure kids get the health care they need.
Government policy makes a huge difference in the lives of people and in families. One silver lining of the pandemic is that if you say that folks need to stay enrolled in their coverage at the state level, they do.
This is Eric Gladys reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
The 10-year anniversary of legal recreational cannabis in Colorado was this week. KGNU's Hannah Lee Myers and longtime cannabis correspondent Leland Ruckert have both been covering marijuana issues since that change happened in 2012. So they sat down as part of KGNU's Cannabis Report to discuss successes and failures 10 years into the end of the state's marijuana prohibition.
All right, Leland, so 10 years gone. What have we learned? Where are we succeeding? Where might we be failing?
That's interesting. About 10 years ago about this time, December 10th, that was when John Hickenlooper signed the bill. And I hadn't been paying that much attention to the marijuana initiatives. You know, there had been a few here in Colorado and they hadn't passed. And then in December, he signed the bill and something clicked in my head. It said, oh my God, I'm going to be able to buy cannabis legally within a year. And I began studying marijuana in more detail. That's when I really got at it. That led to a column in Boulder Weekly, Weed Between the Lines, a 3-year stint with Senzi Magazine, and this, which, you know, just shows continued interest in marijuana, now psychedelic legalization, things that we wouldn't have thought of 20 years ago, would never have imagined that any of this would happen. And the governor who opposed it is now Senator John Hickenlooper from Colorado, and he's trying to get Congress to legalize marijuana like Colorado did. This is a person who was against it when he was governor. He was against it at the beginning. And so how has the state done in 10 years? From a personal standpoint, I can buy pot legally in a store for less money than I paid on the black market more than a decade ago. And, you know, whether that's better, whether the pot is as good as the illegal stuff, that's a hotly debated issue. I'm not going to get into it because it's different for everybody.
And then another big part of Amendment 64's passage was treating marijuana like alcohol. I mean, it was right there in the title. Do you feel like that's something that the state has been successful in accomplishing?
You know, somewhat. That's about all I can. Not really. The law passed recently that lowered the amounts that people can buy. It made it much more difficult for medical marijuana users. I think they were the ones that had to pay for the legislature feeling that too many kids were getting a hold of it. I think that that's had an effect on the medical side. We've seen diminishing amounts of money in taxes from the medical side. So we'll have to kind of watch that and see what happens in the next few years. I'm not really sure. I fear it might be the end of medical marijuana, but I'm not positive of that yet. So we'll just keep watching that. A quick word about marijuana use. A recent study said that 3 in 10 Coloradans use cannabis in one way or another. Unless it's true that dispensaries are grooming more people to use more cannabis, which I don't believe, that number is not going to be 5 in 10 in any reasonable amount of time. And cannabis is just not that popular. And today it's legal in two adjoining states, which it wasn't 10 years ago, and New Mexico and Utah. So that makes a lot of difference here in Colorado. I mean, when we first did it, we were the first state to do it, and nobody else had done this before. And so, you know, and to looking at it, legalization has brought amazing amounts of money to the state. More than $12 billion in marijuana has been sold in 10 years. Think of that, $12 billion. And the state's collected more than $2 billion in taxes. That's a lot of money. Colorado and Washington State took in more revenue from marijuana sales than from either alcohol or cigarettes in fiscal year 2022. I think that's good news. And if you look at the number of places where people can drink alcohol, there's a few more where you can drink alcohol than consume cannabis. That's one of the places where we haven't been able to deal with that. You know, all the states that have legalized have had this problem. We do have the cannabis church with cannabis as a sacrament. We have a Denver hotel that's going through all of its paces to make it a 420 hotel and a place where people can enjoy cannabis just like they enjoy alcohol. Denver recently amended its rules to allow hospitality places, and I thought that that might really bring out some interesting things, but as of almost two years, nothing has happened at all. The coffee joint at 1130 Yuma Street is Denver's only licensed and operating establishment for marijuana consumption. So when it comes to driving, we're in about the same place. You know, Colorado's driving limit for THC is 5 nanograms per milliliter of blood. And that was set in 2013, and state officials have since admitted that the science is misleading. I've been part of a study where we know that the science is misleading. THC levels in the blood remain high for regular users over 12 hours after consumption, but the THC blood levels in novice users spike immediately after smoking, and then they drop down after that. So everybody's different, and it's not like alcohol. And police departments here are aware that the tests that you use to detect alcohol are not applicable to marijuana users. They're just not the same.
And I've heard that referred to as like a soft prohibition issue in the state because there are these gray areas where if you set nanogram levels or set levels in an inappropriate way or in a way that isn't reliable, that means pretty much getting behind the wheel if you use cannabis at all puts you at risk. And that's something we seem to not have figured out quite yet how to address that.
No, we haven't. You know, with alcohol, we basically understand that a certain alcohol level will incapacitate someone. Not everyone, but someone. And, that, you know, we basically go by that. But we haven't come up with anything on marijuana for that. So as far as that's concerned, I'd say overall the state's got about a C or a C plus.
It seems like a lot of these issues are up to industry now, the industry now, to figure out. There's a lot of opportunity still in cannabis to figure out how do we appropriately judge someone's intoxication level? How do we address the waste with all the containers that are associated with cannabis? These are all kind of issues that the cannabis industry is facing, but seems particularly motivated to find solutions for and work with administrators to do so in a way that is something that can be replicated in other states. Looking forward at the next 10 years, there's a lot of improvement, it seems like, that can be made, but a lot of interest and passion in addressing some of those problems.
There really is. There really is amongst a lot of people. I just hope that that kind of an attitude can continue over the next 10 years.
I mean, here we are, these 10 years later, we have 21 states that have recreational use of cannabis in some way, including Guam and I know DC, and then you have 10 states and the U.S. Virgin Islands that have decriminalized its use, and you have medical marijuana, I think, in like 39 states. So, I mean, Colorado has clearly taken a big step that has been followed by a lot of other places. Well, we certainly appreciate you keeping us in the loop as usual, Leland, and we will keep bringing you information about cannabis and all of the other exciting things similar going on in Colorado here on the Cannabis Report, the first and third Thursday of every month. Leland, thanks again.
Hey, thanks. Thanks to everybody who listens. This is the end of the year for us. And thanks to everybody who listens. I sure do appreciate it.
We absolutely do appreciate you, and we'll see you next year. For KGNU, I'm Hanley Myers. Thank you.
you can tell by the sound of Cab Calloway that it's finally time again for Radio Nibbles. John Lindorf is back after a sabbatical. John, where have you been?
Where have I been? Well, it's a long, involved story, but late in September, my back started feeling not very good at all. And I ended up having spinal fusion surgery in October. And I've been recovering ever since. I could spend some time telling you about exactly how horrible the food is that is served in hospitals and rehab facilities, but it's the holiday, so let's not go there.
Okay, let's not. Take us somewhere else.
Well, I started figuring out, what did I miss? There's all kinds of local food news. One I hadn't really noticed until now is that starting January 1st, a Colorado law will prohibit the sale of non-cage-free eggs. Basically, it insists that every chicken have a certain amount of square footage, it's starting January 1. You can't buy eggs that are from abused chickens. There's more. There's a good sign that the pandemic, the pandemic shut down so many great them was the coffee classes at Boulder's Ozo Coffee. I'm happy to hear that Ozo in Boulder is going to start hosting classes at its laboratory, and including a brew at home class, which I should take to finally figure out how to brew coffee on January 1st. And there's also a barista class on January 15th. So I wanted to give a shout out to Deborah Merton and the folks at the FED truck, because this past week they rose to the occasion along with local farmers and started producing food for the flood of refugees, which has come to Denver. And we appreciate what they do very much. A lot of news in the restaurant world. Of course, everyone's waiting with bated breath for Voodoo Donuts to open. We can also tell you that the Sushirama has opened in Broomfield, so you can get sushi on a conveyor belt. I also learned that Maria Empanada, which was supposed to open in Boulder, isn't going to open.
Oh, but you know what is? I just have to interrupt. There's a Pupusa's restaurant that's going to open up. It's their main one is in Denver, but it's going to be opening up in Boulder. We're looking forward to that. Anyway, sorry. Please continue.
Is it in that same spot?
It's on Arapahoe. It's kind of in the shopping center where the Sprouts is.
Oh, great.
Yeah, they've already have their sign up, but they're just not open yet.
Yeah, and the other exciting news is that the Boulder Public Library is going to open Rio on the bridge, and it's going to be called Tonantzin Casa de Café. It's a new Latin American eatery, so we're excited about that. And also a new restaurant called Masas and Agaves is going to open where Arcana was and Supermoon on Walnut. There's a lot of activity now, kind of filling in some of the spots that have been closed for so long.
It's also a new Indian, or the extension of an Indian restaurant, coming to Longmont.
Yes, one of my favorite places, Tiffin's, is going to open, or actually has opened. It's expanded to Longmont, which is great, and also a Louisville restaurant that I like, Busaba Thai, has opened a second place in Boulder up on the hill. So there's a lot of new stuff open. In terms of old stuff, you know, we talk about restaurants that have lasted 5 years or 6 years, you know, and how great that is, or even 20 years. In 2023, The Sink on the Hill will be 100 years old. And the restaurant is collecting stories, personal reminiscences about life at The Sink. And they're hoping to share those during the year in 2023. So I invite you to contact them if you have special memories, especially things that have to do with KGNU that took place at The Sink.
Well, we just have a few seconds left, so all I have time for is to ask you, what's the best thing you've eaten lately?
I got out for my first legit restaurant meal, and it was an incredibly wonderful chicken pot pie at Acreage up on the hill in Lafayette.
Well, John, I'm so happy to have you back, and you'll be back next week. We'll be speaking about naughty and nice local food and drink stocking stuffers. Thank you so much, John.
I toast your health this season.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Stacy Johnson, Alexis Kenyon, Steve Miller, and Jimmy Searfoss for their contributions to today's program, as well as Hannah Lee Myers, Leland Rucker, and John Lindorf. Stay tuned for A Public Affair with guest host Henry Larson, just after these news headlines from the BBC.